It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Last December 7th, a Carnegie Mellon University sophomore named Henry Armero died in a fall from his bedroom window. His death was ruled a suicide. It was the fifth suicide on the CMU campus in 10 years. The following week, an article appeared in the campus newspaper, The Tartan, written by newly graduated senior Katie Chironis. In her piece, she described in detail the psychological and emotional toll the school's academic workload is taking on students. The problem is not unique to CMU, but the stress of keeping up with the demands at elite schools increases the likelihood that tragedies can occur unless steps are taken to provide a system of support for students' mental health needs. Following a town hall on campus, Carnegie Mellon now appears to be looking at ways to address this issue, and it's an issue we're discussing in the first part of today's program. I'm joined now in Studio A by CMU Dean of Student Affairs, Gina Casolino. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh, Gina.
Thanks for having us, Paul.
Also with us is Student Body President Will Weiner. Will, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And with us by phone from Seattle is Katie Chironis, a December 2012 CMU graduate and former staff writer for The Spartan, CMU's student newspaper. Hello, Katie.
Hi. Hello.
And if you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is essspgh@wesa.fm. And you can reach us on Twitter at essspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. We'd especially like to hear from you if you are a college student. What kinds of stress have you experienced as a student? Are you experiencing high levels of stress? How are you dealing with that stress? And what means of support are available to you where you go to school? 412-246-2002, the number to call. Katie Chironis, let's begin with you. What was going through your mind when you wrote your article for The Tartan that essentially blew the lid off of this already boiling pot? The piece entitled, "The Happy Mask, Carnegie Mellon Must Address Stress Culture."
I actually was sort of given the idea, in the first part, the tragic death of Henry, who was a student at Carnegie Mellon, was followed by my friend Anna Walsh, who was another editor at the Tartan, posting an article on Facebook where she talked about MIT's new program, where they were talking about potentially opening up more student-led services for mental health and that sort of thing. And, you know, she was like, isn't it a shame that Carnegie Mellon doesn't have anything like this? Maybe something like this stuff could have been prevented. And as I was reading through MIT's new article on their service, I was like, you know, why don't we have something like this? And sort of led me to reflect on the experiences that I had as a student at Carnegie Mellon going through the mental health services there and finding them inadequate in a lot of places. And so that was sort of what led me to write the article. It was kind of just like an outpouring at 3 a.m. one night when I was like, you know what, I need to get this off my chest, and this is the best way to do it, and maybe it will bring something about to change.
One of the things that you wrote was, it's not fair to see good people throw everything on the altar of Carnegie Mellon and get no acknowledgement that, yes, this is hard, and yes, it's difficult to cope, end quote. Are you saying that there hasn't been or had not been a support mechanism in place on the CMU campus?
We do have CAPS, which is the Counseling and Psychological Services on campus, and they do help students by assigning them psychologists or psychiatrists to sort of mentor them. And you get 12 free sessions when you start as a freshman at Carnegie Mellon. But what I found going through the services was that a lot of the time the mentors that I was being given weren't really a fit for me. To a certain extent, they can't really help you beyond sort of listening to your problems and not really responding or saying anything back to you.
If I can jump in, Katie, when you say you get sessions, what does that mean exactly? What is a session?
So from my understanding and my experiences, it's a 30-minute session where you sit down with a counselor and they ask you, like, what's going on this week? And then you sort of talk at them. And I don't know if they're legally allowed to say anything back to you. It seemed like for the three counselors I had, they never would they would, like, it got to the point where they really were not saying anything back to me at all.
Okay, well, let me jump in again, because, Katie, as you're saying this, Gina Casalino here, the dean of students at CMU, is shaking her head no. She's disagreeing with what you're saying. So I want to let her clarify what she she'd like to say.
Sure. And Katie, I think the 30-minute reference that you're making was probably your first experience at the counseling center, which we deem as an intake session, and it's an opportunity to meet with one of our trained clinical social workers or therapists who works with a student in that first intake session to understand what the scope is of the issue that they're coming in with that has them presenting to the counseling center for that first experience, to really identify their goals for what they're seeking to achieve in a therapeutic relationship so that we are best poised to make an appropriate referral either within the counseling center to work with one of our trained psychotherapists or to potentially refer out into the community. It's about in about 10% of the cases that students who present at the counseling center, it's pretty clear early on that there is a level of need and a desire to engage in a longer-term therapeutic relationship than our brief-term model can support at CAPS. Katie, you're exactly right that we offer up to 12 sessions each academic year for our students, but we do work on a brief-term model so that we're able to serve as many students who desire the services. So that first session is a 30-minute intake to identify goals and determine what the appropriate referral point is, either within the center for about 90% of our students and about 10% of our students to refer out into the community. And then thereafter, sessions are 50 minutes. And really, I think you're right. They do vary wildly for students. And I think I have a background in counseling. That's what my master's degree is in. And that relationship is a really important one to set up early on. And it can be awkward and difficult. And we do hear that from students and people who seek services, even who aren't in the student population. Counseling can be something that is foreign for people and can be difficult for some people to get initiated and finding that right match and a connection. So our therapists absolutely can share back and reflect and talk back, I think is what your quote was, Katie. But you're right that there is some amount of that experience that is geared to helping a student identify for himself or herself what it is that the issues are that are presenting for them, and a counselor's there to really help a student find answers for himself or herself, not to provide answers.
Will Weiner, you are the CMU student body president, the one person in this discussion who is a current CMU student. Would you say that the mental health services at CMU that the university provides are adequate for the students' needs?
I think it's hard to say definitively one way or the other. Obviously, in response to this and even some other stuff my vice president and I were working on prior to these incidents, we're looking at sort of are these sufficient and is there something we need to supplement it in the sense that for less severe cases of sort of like mental health, but people are just stressed. And what I found through sourcing a lot of people through social media, through the town halls, is there's not a definitive response. There are some people I've met who have been satisfied, and there are plenty more I've met who have been dissatisfied with their time with the counseling center. And I think that fact in itself is what's concerning, is that there's a great inconsistency across experiences. And that's part of what we're trying to do to move forward to investigate is that inconsistency due to inconsistency in, you know, the people at the services, to the way students are utilizing it, and how can we make it something that's consistently successful and helpful for students. So I would say that, like, across the board, there have been mixed responses because we've tried to get as representative as information as we can. But the fact that there is mixed responses indicates a problem, and that's sort of what we're doing with follow-up is trying to understand why are we getting negative experiences, what can we do to supplement either a lack of support, and what can we do to fix what support is already there if it's not satisfactory, and why isn't it satisfactory to certain students.
Katie, you have sought the help of these services. What was your experience like?
Well, I think I may have had an atypical experience. The first time I went to CAPS, I was going through some difficulties with my roommates, and I asked for a mediation And the next week I came back and the therapist told me, all right, we found some Zen or some Buddhist monks in the area that we can refer to you. And I was like, Buddhist monks? Why? And he was like, yeah, you asked for a meditation. And I said, no, I asked for a mediation. And that was my first experience with CAPS. From there, I ended up attending throughout the rest of my junior year. And as I said before, it mostly seemed like it was me sort of talking and the therapist sort of nodding but not saying anything back to me. And it got to a point where I felt kind of strange, almost like I was talking to like the wall. So I ended up discontinuing at the end of the junior year. My senior year, I came back because I was taking 60 units and leading two clubs and a bunch of other things, and was sort of feeling like I just really needed someone to talk to. I didn't feel like I had any serious need of CAPS, but I just sort of wanted a listening ear. And I found that once again, it was the same, where I was sort of spending my hour session talking and getting no response. So that was the point at which I started thinking about writing the article.
We're talking about stress among college students and how universities are equipped to deal with that. Joining us by phone from Seattle is a CMU graduate, Katie Chironis. Also with us is the CMU Dean of Student Affairs, Gina Casolino, and Will Weiner, who is Student Body President at CMU. We'd like to hear from you the issues that you have dealt with as a student, perhaps as a parent of a student, or if you are currently in school, what sort of mechanism is in place where you are attending class to help you deal with the stress you're experiencing in college. 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Again, 412-246-2002. We'll continue our discussion after this break. You're listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we are talking about the discussion at CMU, a forum that was recently held in the wake of an article that appeared in the CMU student newspaper, The Tartan. We're talking about stress on campus and responding to a suicide that occurred last December at CMU, the fifth on that campus in 10 years. And with us for this discussion is Gina Casolino, Dean of Student Affairs at CMU, as well as Will Weiner, Student Body President at Carnegie Mellon University, and Katie Chironis, proud CMU graduate, joining us by phone from Seattle. If you'd like to join the conversation, 412-246-2002. Let's go to Carlos in Pittsburgh with a comment or question. Carlos, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you? I have four quick points. In 1965, when I went to the University of Chicago, which was a high-stress school environment and had a reputation for having one of the highest suicide rates among undergraduates, what I found was that among my peers, the radical switch from being the top dog to being in the middle of the pack created a lot of distress among students. And I suspect that's happening at CMU. And the pressure to be the highest achiever when you're no longer the top dog, I think, has its own consequences in producing mental health dislocations.
Let me jump.
Mental health services don't know what to do with the new types of students, either the minorities in my age, or I'm almost sure women and gender at CMU. They don't know how to adapt to a new constituency, and therefore there's a mismatch between service on one hand and new clientele and needs on the other.
All right, let me just jump in there, and I appreciate both of those points. Let's let Gina Casolino respond, the Dean of Students at CMU. Certainly, there is a some striking similarities between the University of Chicago
Absolutely.
And CMU. But it's been a while, it sounds like, since Carlos was in college. He does say, as other students today say, that the mental health services don't match the needs of the students. When you hear that, what is your response, Gina?
Yeah, I think it's regrettable that that's the narrative. And it is a complex, evolving field. I agree with you absolutely about that, Carlos. But what you describe and what our students have described in the wake of this really important campus dialogue is an age-old issue. I've heard it from alums and I've heard it from current students that this idea of coming to a hard-charging place with so many intelligent passionate, talented faculty and students with so much energy that being in that environment, when you already bring a sensibility of wanting to achieve and being top in your class, and that has been your experience prior to coming to Carnegie Mellon, I don't think that's actually a new phenomenon. I think what is new and what has changed in the landscape absolutely in the last 15 years is we have many more students presenting, and this is across the nation. We see this. Paul, you referenced that it's not unique to Carnegie Mellon. I talk with colleagues across the nation, as do our therapists, and the director of our counseling center talks with his colleagues across the country, that it is the case that we are seeing more and more students presenting with greater psychopathologies and greater needs for support and services. And we work very hard to try to match those needs. But I don't think that's a very transparent reality to the broader population. I do think there is an element in what I've heard from Katie and heard from Will that absolutely helps us focus and think about how can we continually improve our services in the counseling center. But you have said, Paul, and others have said through this conversation, as had Will, that what else, there is more I think we can be doing as an institution to think about how we can create an environment for students who are seeking care from the counseling center and students who aren't, to think about how to approach the stress issues and mitigate them without needing necessarily the services of counseling and psychological services. Only about 10% of students present to the counseling center, which is a norm for national trends. So I think we have a broader issue than just looking at the services.
Right. And it's a very good point, and that's a question that I want to address to Will and Katie, which is how much do the students need to share the responsibility in all of this, especially if they're not being honest with themselves and wearing what Katie calls the happy mask?
Yeah, I definitely think it is. Obviously, it's a two-sided thing, and I think that's part of what I've been trying to target is how, as students, can we make it something that's more transparent that it's okay to talk about? I've been very fortunate here that I've had a really strong support group in some of the communities I've been a part of, so that I don't think I've bottled it up as much, because everyone will be stressed at some point or another. But there's a lot of stigmas in terms of, you know, oh, like I'm having more all-nighters than you are. Ha ha, ha ha. And that's kind of a dangerous cultural thing. You know, why aren't you overloading? Why don't you have two majors? And that comes from a lot of different pressures, but I do think it's partway a fault of the students for being able to step back and say, you know, how are we defining success? Let's not stigmatize those who aren't necessarily, you know, achieving in different ways than we are, because it is – I wouldn't say it's a nastily – that's not even a word. I don't know. But it's the competitive nature of the school. It's not that students are out and out just trying to beat each other, but it's almost like a way we cope with stress – by kind of seeing who's more stressed, and that's an issue.
And certainly when you're in your late teens, early 20s, you're not necessarily at a point in your young adulthood when you're best equipped to deal with stress. Katie, why did you wait so long to speak out?
Well, I guess partially out of fear. Ever since I wrote the article, I've been getting death threats in email. I even got a couple of anonymous phone calls. So it kind of received an intense backlash, and I suspected that that might be the case. So,
one of the things that you mentioned in your piece was a poem that a student had written in a staircase where she had committed suicide. This happened during your first year of school at CMU.
To clarify, the student was a he, Rohan Zakaria, and he did not write the poem. The poem had been written on the staircase already, and the staircase actually has the name Architect's Leap, and it had been penned prior to his suicide and was not connected.
And the campus, as you pointed out in your piece, the poem was erased, and you had said that CMU had denied any knowledge of the poem, which was written beforehand and then went silent on the issue. What were you looking to point out there?
Well, that was probably the point where a dialogue should have begun, when there is an entire staircase called Architect's Leap, and, you know, there's sort of an eerie poem penned on the underside. Maybe that's an indication that there's a wider issue that deserves a dialogue. And I think it took a few years longer than needed to get to that dialogue, and I'm extremely glad that it's happening now. I just wonder if some things could have been avoided by having it earlier.
Well, Gina Casalino, because many of the mental health issues young people experience don't surface until they go away to college, is it especially important for the university to monitor students? And has it been slow to admit the need to do so?
It's a really good question, Paul. And Katie, I need to really call out and thank you for starting this dialogue, because it is one that I really think has been bubbling for many of us for a number of years. And I think the broad engagement of our faculty, staff, students, and alumni has been extraordinary. And I'm so grateful for it. And it all happened because of your article. And I'm really troubled to hear that you have received the kind of response from some people that you have. And I'm so sorry to hear that. But yes, it's absolutely an important dialogue. And it's one that we as a student body and as an administration and as a faculty are very committed to looking at. I think the town hall really popped the cork on a bubbling issue that many of us have been passionate about for a long time in all ranks of the university's population and community. And I'm really grateful for the traction that we've gotten and the forward progress that I know we're already making and that we're looking to make as a broader community. So, Katie, we have you to thank for initiating that. And
We're running a little short on time, and I want to allow one last caller to get through who's been waiting patiently, Christine in the South Hills. Christine, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
I have what may, on first glance, appear to be a very unusual question, but I'm wondering if CMU has animals on campus, dogs and cats. The reason I ask that is they're being used therapeutically in nursing homes, and both of my daughters attended incredibly stressful schools. One has animals because she's in grad school there. The other one did not. And the only thing I think that saved her was there was a professor on campus who needed an assist dog. And my daughter offered to help walk the dog. So it became a real calming influence on her, and she was the stress level was very high. That's the reason I'm asking.
Yeah, it's a great question, actually. We do have student organizations who bring animals to campus during peak stress periods to create that sort of therapeutic interaction. Maybe this is a strange analogy, but I'll also say that we have students talk about the presence of young children on our campus at the Syart Center and the Children's School also create that sort of calming influence in some ways of greater humanity that I think sometimes connects our students to being able to step back from the stresses. And kids and animals are great outlets in that regard. So I think it's a good question.
I want to let Craig in the North Side in because he is a former CMU student and wants to make a point here. Craig, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yes, as a student, I had my best friend. We were both in architecture school. I had my best friend commit suicide my freshman year, and he was one of the most popular people in the class. And I would never have expected that he would have done this. And I myself had issues. It was a very stressful, program. And I actually had two locations in the school that I had actually thought, well, I'll go there if I have to go and commit suicide myself. And it just gave me a sense of calm to know that I could get out of it because it was so stressful. But I never thought of going to a counselor. I knew there were counselors in the school, and it never dawned on me. So I don't know what you do with people that are so stressed like that and don't think, just have this idea that, I can get out of it. I'm so stressed. I don't have time to do anything else but do schoolwork. I don't know how you convince somebody that they need to go to get help.
Will, as the student body president at CMU, what do you tell your fellow students when they are expressing their need to get some help?
I think this goes back to some of the culture stuff I was talking about. In it's very much a stigma that you shouldn't be asking for help, and that's something we're looking to try and fix. And it goes partially through freshman orientation, and it goes partially through campus leaders. And I think one of the best outcomes of this article is you've had people who are campus leaders, people like myself, who are kind of stepping up and saying, it's okay to ask for help. I've had stressful times. This is what I've done during stress. And by making that more transparent, where in different circles, if people step forward and say, it's okay to acknowledge we are stressed, you know, even a year ago, I've never been to the counseling, but if I had been, it might have been scary for me to step out and say, you know, I've been to counseling, because they're like, what's wrong with Will? And so I think the first step, and this is a kind of a concerted effort, and I think student leaders have been stepping up and helping with this, to be able to be willing to say there's nothing wrong with you if you are going to counseling. And because there are plenty of people, like Gina said, 1 out of 10, and people even after the article who came up to me, who I'd never imagined, you know, had issues and were posting on Facebook because I did a post, you know, what would you like me to follow up with this on? And very publicly saying this was my experience in counseling. That sends an important signal to people to say it's okay to access these resources and it's okay to talk about it. And we have to figure out ways, and we're working on ways, to make it okay for everybody to feel comfortable sharing that and have that out in the open. And I think, you know, to take off the mask that Katie references.
And to end this on a positive note, there was that forum that was held in December. What has come out of that? What's being done on the campus now to address this issue?
Right. So the forum was held at the end of January. We had over 250 participants, and we're having a follow-up deliberative dialogue on March 19th, where we hope to host 100 faculty, staff, and students. And from that, we will launch a couple of task forces to look at specific issues that the deliberative dialogue will help us identify as the most important issues for us to focus on. There are a lot of grassroots efforts that are already underway. The Counseling Center is looking at a number of efforts. One thing they'll do is pilot a semester-end student support group that won't be authentic therapy. It won't be group therapy, but rather a support group for students to come together at the end of the semester as things get stressful for the latter half of the spring semester. So there are a number of things that are already underway we're very excited about.
Gina Castellino is CMU's Dean of Student Affairs. Thank you so much for joining us. Also with us in studio, Will Weiner. Thank you as well for being here. And with us from Seattle, CMU graduate Katie Charonis. Thank you so much for being with us today, Katie.
Paul, no problem.
Paul, thank you very much for shining some light on this really important issue.
Coming up, business contributor Rebecca Harris observes Women's History Month when Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA.